you wake in a strange room. Your clothes are foreign, and the walls are covered in objects from a different world. You don't know where or when you are, or if you're still dreaming. There are footsteps in the hall. Jumping up, you race out of the room and into the streets. You have just entered the Twilight Histories.
Hi, I'm Jordan Harbour, and what you're about to hear today is the final episode of Blue Dragons, and the final bow of the character I've been weaving through these narratives over the past 10 years. 10 years! That's quite a milestone. And to celebrate this milestone, and here's a nice segue, I'm giving away a ton of swag to our Patreon community. Recruits will get stickers, agents will get mugs, guides will get t-shirts, and at the very top tier, if you're a Jaron, you will get a hoodie. We have 127 patrons getting gifts so far, and I'm happy to send you one too. All you have to do is join our Patreon community and support the show for 3 months. It is our patrons who have kept this show going for 10 years, and it absolutely could not have happened without them. So to everyone who is part of our Patreon community, thank you. Back in 2010, I knew I wanted to make a podcast, but I didn't know what I wanted to make it about. The first concept I came up with was called Explorers, a show about people who trekked out into the great unknown. I wrote a few scripts for it, and I wish I still had those today. I never did launch that show, but I always thought it was kind of a cool idea, and I hoped someday someone out there would do it. Because, honestly, that's something I'd listen to. Well, someone did create that podcast. His name is Matt Breen, and his show is called The Explorers Podcast. I recommend you check it out. Have a listen to this trailer.
Hello, this is Matt from The Explorers Podcast. I want to invite you to join me on the voyages and journeys of the most famous explorers in the history of the world. At the Explorers Podcast, we plunge into jungles and deserts, across mighty oceans and frigid ice caps, over and to the top of great mountains, and even into outer space. These are the thrilling and captivating stories of Magellan, Shackleton, Lewis and Clark, and so many other famous and not so famous adventurers from throughout history. So come give us a listen. We'd love to have you. Go to explorerspodcast.com or just look us up on your podcast app. That's the Explorers Podcast.
That's The Explorers Podcast by Matt Breen. And now, on to today's show, the conclusion of Blue Dragons by myself, Jordan Harbour. You were right. The Ancient Ones do experience the world in higher dimensions. They have revealed some of these dimensions to me. I have gone far, but not so far that I can't return. Can't return? The more you climb, the more difficult it is to climb back down. I am here with you now, but this is very painful for me, being on this plane with you. I'm eager to return to the higher dimensions. Have you seen the Ancient Ones? What do they look like? I have only experienced traces of them. I have gone far, as I say, but they are much, much further. For them to communicate with me is difficult, and it's almost impossible for them to reach us here. If they were to try, it would be so terrifying that many of these people would simply die. Sounds like the old Hebrew god. Maybe think of it like this. Imagine there's a chasm, and some people are on the far side. Because they're so far away, they look small. Let's say you can jump very far. When you leap across, They don't grow in perspective, as you would expect them to, but they remain small. So when you land, you do so as a giant among ants. Your feet may crush them. Weird. So, if you had to cross the chasm to be here with me, why aren't you a giant? Or at least larger than you normally are? I went through a form of interdimensional decompression. So you're basically Jesus coming to visit me in human form. I'm not sure who Jesus is. It's a joke, Zambras. A human joke. Never mind. Okay, so you want to take me to a higher dimension. How does it work? Look, Zambras says, and points to the mosque. It seems almost to breathe. It's almost imperceptible. You think you're imagining it. But then the mosque heaves out. You instinctively raise your arms, expecting the walls to come crashing down. Instead, they unfold. Each block of marble transforming into a kind of multi-edged crystal. The whole building gleams. It's so beautiful. It almost doesn't look real. The heavy, blocky stone has turned into a crystal palace, so light and airy, you worry it can't support its own weight. That is a little better, Zambras says. It's amazing, you say. This is what you've been experiencing? This is what the Ancient Ones see? No, this is the first step. It is still very painful for me. It is far from the dimension where I reside. You're kidding. You just turned stone into crystal. How could it get any better than that? How would it feel if you returned to your world of stone? Would that be disappointing to you? I guess it would, now that I've seen this. Well, this dimension is painful to me, and I want to get higher as fast as possible. Would you mind if we kept going? I've never known you to rush anything, Zambras. It is proof of my discomfort. Let us continue. The Crystal Palace breathes again. With a great heave, it unpacks once more. The crystals ripple out in an explosion of detail. They glitter in the sunlight. You can almost sense the sun's rays bouncing in intricate patterns as they dance throughout the great building. You look over at Zambras. He has changed too. His old, heavy form has turned transparent. His frame is light. You look down at your own body, and it's the same. You even feel a lightness. You feel young. You jump and find yourself 6 feet in the air, laughing as you float down. Zambras chuckles. It feels better, doesn't it? He says. Yes, I'll never go back. No, he says, a little sense of warning in his voice. Is this it? Is this where the Ancient Ones are? No, and keep in mind I have never seen them. I've only waded into the waters where they dwell. So there's more. Show me. The crystals grow more intricate and more brilliant. Your body is lighter. You feel your feet rise from the ground. What's happening? Am I flying? Zambras laughs. His feet, too, are floating off the ground. You look around at the people in the square. Square? It's now a multidimensional dodecahedron, and the people walking through it are humanoid crystals with glowing centers. I can't believe how ignorant I was, you say. Yes, I felt the same way, and I still do whenever the Ancient Ones grace me with another level. But do you see now just how trivial our problems were? I was so despairing in that lower dimension, I even felt remorse for my loss of self and for the memories I didn't have. Yes, yes, I understand. All those things seem ridiculous now. Look at us. We're crystals. We're glowing. We can fly. Zambras laughs and does a flip in the air. I'm so happy you're beginning to understand. Can we keep going? Yes, please.
You rise through the levels. The crystals become increasingly intricate, increasingly brilliant, until they're no longer crystals at all, no longer distinct, but flowing, water-like cascades of phosphorescence. The people glow within a warm bath of what you can only describe as liquid love. And you can fly, or however you might describe it. You move not backwards or forwards, up or down, but transmute effortlessly. Zambros is beaming. You can no longer see his face, but you feel him. He communicates directly to you as though you were of a single mind, transmuting thoughts.
"This is as far as I've gone," he says.
"How much further is it?"
"It's much, much further. The Ancient Ones have sent messages to me. I have finished my task, and now I can go on to be with them."
"We're going to meet the Ancient Ones?"
"Only I am going. You must remain here."
"I can't come with you?"
"No. There is someone else who will guide you."
"Who?"
"And then you know. You feel her. Nina."
She dances towards you, spins around you, then passes right through you so your glowing centers touch. It feels wonderful.
"Nina,"
you say.
"Come on, let's keep going,"
she says, and pulls you.
"Goodbye, Zambros,"
you say as she drags you away. Zambros doesn't respond with thoughts, but sends you feelings of love and gratitude. You turn to Nina.
"Come on,"
she says, into you.
"This place is so dreary."
You give in and let her draw you up through the dimensions, leaping three at a time so that even your effervescent form is shocked and breathless.
"Slow down, please,"
you communicate to her, but then find the thoughts useless and primitive, like tapping sticks compared to a symphony. Yet she understands. She slows, and you hover together. Then she melds with you. You feel her. You feel every part of her melding with every part of you. You are one person. And you have never felt so whole. You never realized there was an unfilled emptiness inside you until this moment. She takes you up the levels, higher and higher, faster and faster. You pass Zambros. The universe is a blur of sensations, a cauldron of creation. You begin to see the possibilities. It is a twinkling clay that's begging to be molded. You dip your hand in and twirl it, forming a galaxy. "Life," you say together with Nina, with one voice, and the galaxy seems almost to smile back at you. There are other forms here. You recognize them. Persephone, Daedalus, Braun. They join you. They meld with you and Nina in a jubilant embrace. The wholeness compounds. Your common being laughs and galaxies spin around you. Tentatively, together, you try out your new being, floating around the galaxies until your minds are accustomed to their unity. You pick a galaxy and soar down into it. You find a star glowing in a nebula. You spin it around and the gases form into planets. You dive down into one of them. You pick up some of the twinkling clay and craft it into a dragonfly. The winged victory, you say and laugh with your whole being as your creation comes to life and flies into the sky. "Let us create," you say, and your whole being plays with the clay, creating plants and animals until the whole world is full of life. When it's done, you relax under a tree and gaze out at your creation. Gaze right through the planet so you can see the whole of it. It is beautiful. It is good. The world shakes. The planet cracks. You fall out of your common body. There's a roar, a terrifying roar that sends you fleeing. Your family reunites into a common being, though this time you are not part of it. Your family sends you feelings of sympathy and comfort. "Do not be afraid," it says. "That was the Ancient Ones." Nina leaves the common being and comes close to you, but does not meld. "You must go back," she says.
"But why?"
"You must save us."
"I want to stay here with you."
"If you stay, the egg and everything in it will be destroyed." Even in this happy place, you feel your heart break. You know she speaks the truth.
"Okay,"
you say.
"I love you."
"And we love you," your family says together.
"Give me a moment," you say.
They agree. You stay there with them. It might be a year, perhaps 100 years, but in this place where time is only one dimension among millions, even this one moment could carry the universe. The Ancient Ones thunder again, though now you can feel it's not out of anger. You recognize great love in their awesome strength. There is love, but now, urgency. You meld once more with your family, then pull away, leaving them forever to this world of infinite creation. You wake. The world is crumbling around you. Is it an earthquake? You rub your eyes and notice your hands are blue. You can see dust and debris falling from the ceiling outside your cramped pod. You rip the cords from your body and press your hands against the glass walls. They crack effortlessly, and you smash your way out. Your body is blue. It's covered in blue scales. You scream in terror, but it comes out as a roar. Two large wings billow out from your back, smashing against the walls and ceiling. The sound of an explosion snaps you to attention. You know where you are. You know these walls. This is the nest, the ancient city of the dinosaurs. And somewhere in the nest is the egg, and with it, your family. You ram the steel door, and it buckles. One kick and it flies open. You crawl out. You're in a hall. Yes, it's the same hall. Something in your mind tells you to turn right down the hall, and you run in that direction. Nest bots lower their weapons as you pass. Why aren't they shooting you? You come to a great hall. There's a metal dome with huge pipes and wires radiating from it. There are nest bots everywhere guarding it. They look like toys to you. But none of them shoot. One of them presses a code on a panel. The dome rises from the floor with a small blast of gas. Explosions from somewhere make the room shake. The great metallic arm raising the dome cracks and the whole thing collapses. You race over and try to lift it.
"Come on, damn you murderous nest bots, help me!"
Your voice is a roar. The nest bots obey. They lean over and pull on the dome. It rises just enough for you to crawl under. There it is, the egg. It's tiny. You take it from the pedestal and raise it to your face.
"Hello, my loves,"
you say. You close your hand around the egg and roll out of the dome. More explosions rock the room and the lights turn off. You open your wings as you run, smashing nest bots as you leap out of the room and back into the hall. You find your way into the main shaft. The elevators are no longer working, but you wouldn't be able to fit in them anyway.
You leap off the edge, and your wings catch the air. You fly up, up, up the shaft, dodging debris and rubble from the collapsing city. You burst into the blue sky of Earth. It's filled with black pockmarks of flying terrors, the ships of the Jarons. Lasers and rocks are spewing from their bellies. Thousands of Jarons are flying over the city like swarms of demons, shooting lasers at Nesbots that are still trying to defend their lost home and its precious egg. You fly up, past the ships and Jarons, up into the clouds. You look down to see the nest rattled by thousands of explosions, destroying the architectural relics of a civilization millions of years old. You open your palm and look at the egg.
I don't know what you want me to do next, but at least I've gotten you out.
You look to the horizon. The moon is rising in the sky over the jungle. Atmospheric regulators pump out their clouds. You remember this view. You were here once, many, many decades ago, or perhaps it was centuries. And yet, only a few days have passed in this world. A few days. A few moons. 3 moons. April. Below you are the pyramids. You can see the outline of an ancient creature city, almost lost to the jungles. You hear the warning screams of the creatures. They've spotted you. You can't help but smile. But then your mind turns to April. Those little bastards had better not have killed her. You descend upon the village, your great wings blasting the air. You roar so loud the trees shake. The creatures fall over each other to escape.
You want a blue dragon skin? Well, here I am,
you say. You land in the clearing in the middle of the village and walk over to the skinning hut. You fly up to it and peer in. There's April. She's covered in skins. She looks dead, her face pale. You pick her up in one hand and cradle her in your arms. You lean your ear down to her. She's still breathing, but it's irregular. You feel the anger rising in you, a great Jarron rage. You wish you had a laser so you could give the creatures a good show, but your presence is probably terrifying enough. You roar, then beat your wings and rise to the sky. There's a flying terror coming directly towards you. You've been spotted. There's no escaping it. You float in midair, April in one hand, the egg in the other. But for all your strength, you are weaponless. And if you have to fight the flying terror, you have no hope of winning. The flying terror maneuvers alongside you. Seeing it this close, its jagged lines seem now to be animated. It makes you think of a thousand-bladed chainsaw. Laser cannons and missiles jut out in a menacing and awe-inspiring display of potential murder. The ship is truly worthy of its moniker, Flying Terror. A door opens in the side. You hold your breath, waiting for the first contact with the Jarons. What will they say? Will they see through your disguise, even through your flesh, blood, and scales? This is not your real body. Or is it? What would Zambros say? A small white head appears in the doorway, punctuated by the glowing dark purple of the interior. You squint your eyes, but you can't make out what it is. The head pops back in. You wait long moments, unsure what to do, or even what you just saw. Looking down at April's pale face, her blue lips, you realize you don't have the luxury of choice. If the Flying Terror is a ship of war, it must have some kind of sick bay. Even if the instruments and medicines are meant for Jarons, it's the chance you have to take. You fly up to the door. You enter the ship. The lighting in the ship is a deep, dark purple that feels natural to your jar-on eyes after the glare of the blue outside. The shapes are jagged, and they also seem natural, even attractive. This all surprises you, your human intellect wrestling with the jar-on instinct built into the structure of your brain. You walk down the hall until you come to the bridge. It's simple, almost minimalist, though in a dark, nocturnal way. There are a few chairs, jar-on-sized chairs. You sit in one, and it fits your body perfectly. A helmet rises from the back of the chair and covers your eyes with a screen that buzzes with symbols and shapes you don't understand. You push it up and rise from your seat.
"Computer,"
you say.
"Yes?"
a jar-on voice says from somewhere in the walls.
"Are you the ship's computer?"
"Yes."
"Is there anyone else on this ship?"
"Yes, there are 3 life forms on board."
"Me, this human, and someone else?"
"Yes, there is a Taurian on board."
"A Taurian?"
you growl. You're surprised by how angry that makes you. Again, it's your jar-on instincts.
"Where is the Taurian?"
you say, trying not to sound too angry.
"The Taurian is in the pod bay."
"Where is that?"
"Follow the lights,"
the computer says, and dashes of purple light appear to hover in the air, turning from you out of the bridge and down the hall. You follow them. You feel the ship rise.
"Computer, where are you going?"
"This ship is on course for deep space. We will be jumping once we leave the atmosphere."
"Deep space? Why? On whose orders?"
"The Ancient Ones."
"The Ancient Ones?"
You look down at your egg.
"You planned this?" "Please continue to follow the lights to the pod room," the computer says. "There is not much time."
You enter the pod room. You see the dark shapes of round domes you can only imagine are pods, whatever a pod is.
"Taurian, are you in here?"
you say. There's a little peep of a voice coming from somewhere in the room.
"Come on out, I won't hurt you."
You let a moment pass before stepping into the room.
"All right, I'm coming in now,"
you say. The trembling form of a small Taurian appears from behind a pod.
"Rama!"
Rama falls back over her tail at the sound of your voice, which must have come out as a roar.
"Please, don't hurt me."
"I'm not going to hurt you, Rama," you say, though you don't trust your body.
All its instincts seem to be screaming to kill.
"Rama, it's me, the little human. I'm in the wrong body."
So, it is you," she says.
"You knew?"
"Yes, but it's still a little scary."
"How do you know? How did you get on the ship?"
Zambros told me. Is that April?"
"Yes. How did you know?"
"Zambros said you'd have her, that I should help."
"Perfect. What do we do now?"
She opens one of the pods. You gently place April inside. She looks tiny in the huge tank.
"What does this thing do?"
you say. "It regenerates bodies. I woke up in one just a little while ago. Come on, help me hook her up." You pick up one of the cords. It's a mean-looking thing, with a razor at the end, meant to puncture scales.
"Is this going to kill her?"
"We're destroying her body anyway, so it won't matter."
"What do you mean we're destroying her body?"
Rama cowers from you.
"I'm sorry. This damn Jaron body is twisting everything I say into rage."
"Okay, I get it. It's a bit scary. The thing is, she's very sick. Her body is going to die. We need to save her mind, destroy her body, then rebuild her body, and put her mind back in. We have to do the same for you, if you want to be human again."
You rage inside at the thought of having your body destroyed, but you manage to suppress the feeling before it shows.
Is this going to work on a human?
It should, she says. She goes to a control panel and begins to work. Yes, I have her genome mapped. And now it's mapping her mind. It should be fine. It looks like everything has been pre-programmed. Can you close the pod now?
You pull it shut. A dark screen closes over the glass. You hear a humming, followed by a sound of liquid pouring. Then something like a dishwasher, a rotating wet sloshing.
What's it doing?
You say, as you reach to lift the dark screen.
I wouldn't do that. It's acid. Her body is being destroyed.
Again the rage, but this time it's mixed with a disturbing curiosity. You shake your head. This jarring body is messing with your personality. Can't wait to get back to normal.
How long were you in the egg?
You say.
Well, let's see. After we got into our pods on Venus, I ended up in the egg. Zambros was there. He told me he'd been recreated from our memories.
Yes, that's what he told me too. What else?
He told me that the Ancient Ones had stolen a flying terror. I would wake up on this ship, and you'd be outside in a Jarron body, holding April in the egg. He said I had to ensure the egg was properly stowed, and that we all went into pods before the ship left the atmosphere.
How long were you in the egg?
Not long, maybe half an hour.
Half an hour?
Yes, you seem surprised.
You shake your head.
Never mind.
Can I see it?
What?
The egg.
You extend your hand and open it, revealing the small quicksilver egg. She reaches for it.
No,
you say, and close your hand.
My family's in there.
But Zambros told me...
Oh, right. He said you should take it.
Yes.
Where are you going to put it?
Over here, she says, and opens a panel on the wall. It's filled with what looks like gauze.
You hand the egg to Rama. She takes it, tenderly, and pets it. She pats down a small spot for it in the gauze and gently places it in, then covers it with a few soft pads.
Goodbye, Zambros, you hear her say under her breath before she tries to close the panel. You instinctively stop her. You feel angry.
There isn't much time, she says. You move your hand away. She closes the panel.
We have to go,
she says, and walks over to the pods. She opens two of them.
Come on, quickly.
You look down at the pod. You see the razor wires. You hear the dishwasher sound of liquid acid disintegrating April's body in the next pod over. You feel terror rising in your chest. But this quickly turns to a warrior's rage, which even your human mind can't control. You roar, then quickly cover your mouth with both hands.
Rama is typing.
Good, good. They're almost programmed. Let's go. She runs to a pod and jumps in. Without a whimper, she stabs the wires into her body and is about to close the pod.
Wait,
you say. You run over and stop the lid from closing.
Where is the egg going? That's my family in there.
They're going out to deep space, between the galaxies.
Why?
Zambros told me it's the only place they'll be safe for all of eternity. This ship will take them there.
What do you mean, all of eternity? How's that even possible? Eternity?
They can just split to an earlier version of the universe whenever it gets too old. They can keep doing that forever.
What about us? Where are we going?
I'm going back to Earth. Zambros said the Taurians are already there.
And the Jarrons?
All dead. The nest destroyed itself and took the Jarrons with it.
And what about April and I?
I don't know. It's time now. We've got to go. Get back to your pod.
What about April and I? What will happen to us?
I said I don't know.
You feel her feeble strength pulling down the pod door, and the rage makes you want to tear her apart. But you catch yourself. You feel, somewhere inside, this may be the last time you'll see her.
Rama, goodbye.
Goodbye, little human.
You let go, and she closes the pod door. Dim lights around the edge show the pod has been activated, and you hear the sound of liquid pouring. You look over at your pod. The door is invitingly open. Will you step inside? The sound of liquid acid sloshing around in the other two pods terrifies you and makes your skin tingle.
Damn it. Fine,
you say. You step into the pod. You open your eyes. You're in a bed. The covers are warm. There's an old-fashioned ceiling fan going round and round overhead. You recognize this room, though you can't tell how. It's somewhere deep in your past. You look out the window. You see the moon. A flash of fear hits you like an old trauma. April, where is she? Is she okay? Memories flood your mind. The nest being destroyed, a Jaron body, flying her out of the creature's hut, Rama and the Jaron ship. Where are you? You look around. This is a human room, designed for humans, and you recognize it. It's definitely from your past. You step onto the floor. It's cold against your soft skin. Your body is human. You're in pajamas. You walk to the door, and it slides open. You're in a hall. There's a man on a ladder, working some wires that pour down from the ceiling. Hello, you say.
Hey,
he says, not looking down from his work. What is this place? Stops what he's doing and looks down at you. It's a hall. Where do you think you were? You suddenly know where you are. You know exactly where you are. Do you know if April's here? April Reinhard?
Nope,
he says and returns to his work. You run down the hall. Your body is young and strong. It's stronger than you remember it. It's as strong as you always wanted it to be. You run to the front desk. There's a customer speaking to the secretary. April Reinhard, is she here? You say, interrupting them. She frowns. Sorry, excuse me. She says to the customer. She takes you aside. Are you okay? Yes, I'm okay. April, is she okay? Yes. She left a few days ago. She did leave something for you. The secretary goes back to the front desk and returns with an envelope. Thank you, you say, and turn back down the hall. You open the letter. Inside is a credit card and a handwritten note. You read it. To my intrepid guide. You're an idiot, but you saved my life and helped me complete my mission. I couldn't wait around to thank you in person, so here's some cash. It's part of the bonus I got for bringing back the plans for the atmospheric regulator. I don't know how you got the plans to my chip, but thank you. Go take yourself on a well-deserved vacation. Yours, April Reinhard, CEO, Red Star Transport.
And thus ends Blue Dragons. Well, what did you think? And now, where from here? This character has been weaving through shows for the past 10 years. Or is it a couple hundred years? And has now flown off into some tropical paradise for a vacation. Will this character ever venture back to the Twilight Histories? Maybe. Who knows? But for now, I'm excited to introduce some new characters to you. And I'm actually toying with the idea of asking you to create the characters. And I'll draft the worlds around them. Maybe you create a local mob boss. I might throw them into the Trojan War. Or perhaps you create a boring dry goods merchant who dreams of exotic streets in some distant universe. The guide might send them off to explore the markets of Constantinople. Oops, looks like the Justinian plague is back. Sometimes I love to take a weak character and throw them into a terrible situation. I'm restarting a fun thing we had going a while back. I've come up with the title of an episode. It's called Oasis Lost. It's now up in our Patreon community, and the idea is that you will slam me with world ideas. Our podcasters will then pick ideas from the list that inspire them and create short shows out of them. Your idea is like a lure trying to catch the eye of a podcaster. If you want a podcaster to notice your idea, this is what I'd recommend. Describe a world, but keep the dates and the obscure names and plot lines out of it. Make it really simple, yet highly creative. If you can generate an exciting image in the podcaster's mind, you have a great shot at getting your idea picked. I'll tell you some ideas put out by our patrons that I think were really cool. These are like candy for the imagination. Some of them have actually been turned into stories, and others probably should be. So here goes. The first one is the asteroid that struck Siberia in 1908, known as the Tunguska event, instead hits Paris. There is an outbreak of a zombie plague. You are on one of the ships escaping the colonies, but the plague has followed you. The Kaaba in Mecca is an ancient alien relic. It activates during the medieval Hajj, turning everyone into super soldiers. The Lakota have gained advanced weaponry. The most terrifying can unleash lightning from the skies. Look out, Yanks! A world where humans don't have eyes and architecture is based on the way sound diffuses. A version of Earth conquered by aliens, a classical civilization rolled into an alien empire. Imagine a city combining Greek and alien architecture, religion, and thought. See, those are all amazing ideas. They're highly imaginative and extremely visual. You can see them, right? There are no dates or obscure historical references. They're simply visual descriptions of fascinating moments in time, and they would all make amazing stories. So head on over to our Patreon community and find the post called Oasis Lost. Add your idea to the list. 3 ideas will be picked by our podcasters, and one of them might be yours, but only if you're a patron. You can find our Patreon community by visiting the website at twilighthistories.com and clicking through to Patreon. I'm Jordan Harbour. Thanks for listening to the Twilight Histories. Until next time, take care.